Merry Christmas from the staff of The Kim Monson Show and KLZ Radio. As you go through your day today, take a moment to reflect on the significance of this day and His coming. Now, here's Kim Monson.
And Merry Christmas. It is Christmas Eve, one of the most holy days of the year. This is Kim Monson, and I'm wishing you and yours a very, very Merry Christmas. Welcome to the Kim Monson Show. We're going to have a great conversation with Bill Federer. He is with the American Minute, and he's written a book, There Really Is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. Steve, I can't wait to have this conversation with Bill Federer.
Yeah, I agree. We had, obviously, he just a few weeks ago helped us out on Thanksgiving. I call him a walking encyclopedia because he'll take any topic, you know, from our history, and you think you know, you have a good idea what's behind that topic, and he'll take you back two centuries, three centuries, four centuries, and he'll just blow you away. So, yes, this is going to be good.
It most definitely is. And before we get into that, it is Christmas Eve, and I want to say thank you. We are so blessed here in this country, and I'm blessed to get to work with an amazing team of you, Steve, and Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. I am so grateful for you and wish each of you a very Merry Christmas.
Well, again, I'm the only one with a microphone out of all those people you just mentioned, and we'll just turn it right back to you and say Merry Christmas, Kim.
Well, thank you. And to each of you listeners out there, each of you, you are treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Strive for excellence every day. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And if you are with friends and family, wish you all just a joyous occasion. If by chance you happen to be solo this particular Christmas, just know that you are treasured and valued, and the hope of Christmas is for each and every individual. And the gospel of Christ is one of freedom. He says the truth will set you free. And the amazing thing about Christ is he loves us enough that he gives us the freedom to either accept him or reject him. He doesn't force himself upon us. And that is one of the things that we talk about all the time, is freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And the gospel is something that you can choose about. And I think that's pretty amazing, Steve.
It is. And I don't want to steal your thunder here, but we all know the story behind It's a Wonderful Life. And there's a segment in there where Clarence allows George Bailey to see what his life would be like if he had never been born. And just the way you opened just a few minutes ago, we're celebrating a birth. And it'd almost be very cool in this day and age for the world to see what it would be like today had this birth not occurred.
It would not. I mean, we certainly have our challenges here, but there is the hope of Christmas. If we didn't have the hope of Christmas, the world would be a very very dark place, that is for sure. So, and you know, another thing I just was thinking about, traditions, since we're going to be talking with Bill Federer, we have some great traditions. One of the things that I love to do is we put out luminaries on Christmas Eve. So when we come back from church, my neighbors also do as well. And actually, that is something that he loves to do. He puts out so many luminaries that one of these years, I think that we're going to have an airplane land on our street out in front of the house.
You could have the FAA coming to see you.
We may, that's for sure. Now, podcasts of the show will be at my website at kimmonson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And be sure and check out my website, again, kimmonson.com. Our inspiration for today, and you know, normally I like to try to give you some history of who we found these quotes from, and I think this is just a regular everyday person like us, Steve. His name's Paul M.L., and he said, "The heir who thinks Santa Claus comes down through the chimney, he really enters through the heart." Love that.
Good. Very good.
And are you ready for some funnies?
Oh, yes, always.
Okay. First one. Former Colorado Governor Richard Lamb, he said, "Christmas is a time when kids tell Santa what they want and adults pay for it. Deficits are when adults tell the government what they want and their kids pay for it." That's not really that funny, is it?
That's too close to the truth. But if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. So carry on.
This is true. Okay, next one. Victor Borga. Remember Victor Borga? I think, you know, when we were kids, he said, "Santa Claus has the right idea. Visit people only once a year."
I kind of might, has a tie to the modern day. Everyone loves it. I'm still not convinced. Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase and his relatives that drop in. Definitely one time a year, people.
Well, but it was for a longer one period of time. You know, what do they say that guests, no matter how much you like them, guests are like fish. They begin to smell after 3 days.
3 days.
Okay, and lastly, Shirley Temple Black, you know, the childhood actress, she said, "I stopped believing in Santa Claus when I was six. Mother took me to see him in a department store, and he asked for my autograph."
That's great. But we got to keep our perspective here in terms of, we know Shirley Temple Black very well. There might be some listening or going, who?
Yeah, Google it. You can take a look at it. She was famous, famous, famous.
Yep.
So before we get into our conversation with Bill Federer, even though it's Christmas Eve, I want to make sure that we are looking into the future. So, of course, in just about a week, we will be at New Year's. 1 week later, the 2020 state legislature will be convening, and on that same day, we will be holding our Stand for Colorado rally. And the reason is because we need to make sure that these PBIs, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, and the governor know that we are watching and hold them accountable. So it will be at 11 o'clock on the west steps of the Capitol, January 8th. Go to the website, standforcolorado.com. You can sign up for alerts on that. And, of course, we'll really be ramping up once we get through Christmas here. And then the other thing, we're starting our salon series here in 2020, and it will be at Water's Edge Winery, Monday, January 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. And it is with Helen Raleigh, who immigrated from China, and Dr. Paul Prentice. And it's the punches to knock down democratic socialism. And socialism is certainly, they like to think that they're Santa Claus, where they give people's money to other people on a regular basis. But ultimately, as Maggie Thatcher said, you run out of other people's money, and then socialism has to resort to force. And as we do the show throughout the year, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And I think basically Americans like their freedom, Steve.
Yes, and I was thinking earlier, you said we need to let the governor know that we're watching. And I'm thinking, does the governor care that we're watching? But yes.
Well, as long as he at least knows that we are watching, I think that we can make a number of changes. And, you know, Coloradans, we are rugged, individualistic people. And, you know, there was a spirit that founded Colorado, and I think there's a romance as people are moving here. But when you move here from these states that have had these socialist policies, but you love the rugged spirit of Colorado, they don't match up. And so we need to be standing for Colorado, for that spirit that built this state and built this country. And that's why I'm really going to be excited to talk to William Federer. We'll be talking about the traditions of Christmas and also St. Nicholas, but he is a wealth of knowledge on the American founding. And be sure and check out the American Minute, because you can hear Bill Federer on KLZ on a regular basis, Steve.
Yes, and you mentioned the podcast earlier. I worked with Bill enough times to know, like I was just saying, about his knowledge level. I think what he's going to share today, people will be wanting to find this podcast because they're going to want it for themselves.
Yeah, and I think it'll be good things to talk about regarding tomorrow, you know, when you're with possibly family, friends, neighbors, or whatever. Just to talk about Christmas traditions, if you don't want to talk about politics or religion, this might be a good thing to talk about, Steve.
It will, and it's a nice, not diversion, yeah, diversion, I guess, for a few days. Let's take a break here and talk about what's really important.
And we will do that. And so the hope of Christmas, Christmas Eve, it is a magical, magical evening. We'll be going to church and then luminaries that when we return home. So one other thing I just wanted to say, Merry Christmas to each of my valued sponsors. As you know, I buy my airtime, which is great. I'm truly an entrepreneur, but it's because of these people that we're on the air. And I want to say Merry Christmas to Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance, Jason McBride, John Buckingham, and the whole team at Presidential Wealth Management, Hooters Restaurants, Susan Kochevar with the historic 88 Drive-In Theater, the Harris family, Liberty Oilfield Services, Jay Davidson, First American State Bank, Lauren Levy with Polygon Fi. All your mortgage questions can be answered. Water's Edge Winery, Liberty Toastmasters, Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors and Complete Colorado. I wish each and every one of you a very Merry Christmas to you and yours. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Bill Federer about, yes, there really is a Santa Claus, and the history of our Christmas traditions. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I'm thrilled to be having a conversation with William J. Federer, Bill Federer. He is, his website is The American Minute. You hear him on KLZ with The American Minute. And he has a great understanding of his history, the American founding. But today, on Christmas Eve, we're going to be talking about There Really Is a Santa Claus, a history of St. Nicholas and Christmas holiday traditions. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Kim, great to be with you.
So there really is a Santa Claus. I'm going to tell my parents that they were kidding when they told me there wasn't. So how is there really a Santa Claus?
Well, St. Nicholas is the most popular Greek Orthodox saint. So he is to Greeks what St. Peter is to Roman Catholics, what St. Patrick is to Ireland. And so there are more Greek Orthodox churches named after St. Nicholas than anybody else. And you have Greek boys named Nick and Nikki. And, and so he lived in Asia Minor. Today, that's Turkey. And it's during the late third, early fourth century. So he was born around 280 and died in 343 AD. And the story is, this is still during the Roman persecution period of history. And the Christians are having their churches torn down and burnt, thrown to the lions in the Colosseum. And the area that he lives in is, there's a movement sweeping through of Christianity, and lots of people are converting. And it was called Pietism, beginning of the monasticism movement. And it was this thought that if you really become a Christian, you should give away all your money and live in a cave as a hermit or join a monastery so we'll never see you again. It was all this withdrawal from society. It was, me-focused salvation, which is important, but it sort of withdrew from society and sort of an early version of separation of church and state. But nevertheless, this Pietism sweeps through, and Nicholas becomes a Christian. And, excuse me, sure enough, he decides he's going to give away all his money and join a monastery. And his parents were wealthy and elderly, and they died when a plague swept through their town. The town is Patara, Asia Minor, P-A-T-A-R-A. And so he decides he wants to give away the money, but he doesn't want to get the credit for it. He wants God to get the credit for it. So he sneaks into town at nighttime and throws the money in the windows of poor people. Supposedly the money lands in a shoe or a stocking that's drying by the fireplace. Anyway, one of the main stories was there was a merchant in the town of Patara who went bankrupt. And back then, the creditors would show up and not only take your house and lands, sort of repo, they would take your children.
Really?
Put them into sex trafficking or prostitution, a horrible, horrible fate. Well, this merchant had three beautiful daughters. He knew if they were taken, it would be this tragic life. And so the father had an idea. He thought if he could hurry up and marry the daughters off, the creditors couldn't take him. Unfortunately, he did not have money for the dowry that was needed for a legally recognized wedding. Well, Nicholas hears the problem late one night, throws the money in the window. The oldest daughter can get married. It's the big buzz talk of the town. Another night, he throws money in for the second daughter. She can now get married. And by the time the third daughter, the dad is expecting it. And so he's waiting up. And when the money comes in the window, the dad runs outside and catches him. And Nicholas makes the father promise not to tell where the money came from. And so this is the origin of the tradition of secret gift giving on the anniversary of Nicholas's death, which was 343 A.D. So that's the beginning of it.
That is absolutely fascinating.
So he does give away all the money. By the way, all this information is in a book. It's titled There Really Is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. He gives away his money, and he goes to the Holy Land to join a monastery called Zion, and he is going to live the rest of his life in seclusion. But right before he takes his final vows, somehow the Lord impresses upon him not to hide his light under a bushel. So he gets on a boat, not before stopping off at Bethlehem to see where Jesus was born. But matter of fact, even Mark Twain, in one of his books, when he visited the Holy Land, he said, I stopped off at the place where St. Nicholas had visited before he went, you know, back around the world and, you know, the friend of my childhood and so forth. But so Nicholas visited the Bethlehem. Well, he does go back to Asia Minor, gets off at a busy port city called Myra, and unbeknownst to him, the bishop had died. And the church leaders couldn't decide who the next bishop's supposed to be. And one of the church leaders has a dream that the first person to church the next day would be named Nicholas, and he was to be their next bishop. Well, Nicholas's habit was to fast all night, and before you would break the fast, you would go to church and have communion. That's where you get the word break fast. And so he shows up, the first one there. The old man is waiting and says, what's your name? When he says Nicholas, he says, come here. Brings him into the room where they're all fasting and praying, and they tell him, you're supposed to be our bishop. Well, he was not too excited about this because the Roman Emperor Diocletian was arresting bishops and killing them. So it was sort of like, you be the bishop. No, I insist, you first. No, you be the bishop. And so Nicholas finally agrees. He's the bishop. He's arrested. He's put in jail. And he's awaiting death until the emperor is struck with an intestinal disease so painful he abdicates the throne on 305 A.D., May 1st. So this is Diocletian. He had lost some battles with Persia. He asked his generals why they lost. The general said, well, you've neglected worshiping the Roman gods. So Diocletian purges all the military and forces all the military to return to worshiping the Roman gods. Then he uses the military to force the entire Roman Empire to return to worshiping the Roman gods. And he starts this terrible persecution of Christians, systematically province by province, tearing down churches, you know, burning the scriptures, cutting out their tongues, boiling them alive. And even supposedly erected a monument to the extermination of Christianity. But then he struck with this intestinal disease, and Diocletian abdicates the throne May 1st, 305 A.D. And the Roman emperors by this time had sprinkled gold dust in their hair and declaring themselves a god and demanding their image be worshipped. So this was sort of like a god resigning. I just think that's sort of funny. So here's Diocletian. He steps down, takes up farming on the other side of the Adriatic, and a next emperor is Galerius. He continues the persecution of the Christians. He's struck with the intestinal disease and dies. And now there's no emperor. And in Rome, when this situation happened, the generals would fight it out. And the soldiers pledged allegiance to their general, not to the country. And they would go to death on that order of their general. And so you have four generals. Two are defeated. Comes down to Constantine and Maxentius. Constantine is in York, Britain. His soldiers get the news. They surround him and yell, Hail Caesar. In other words, we're with you. He marches, and it's the Battle of the Milvian Bridge, 313 A.D. The day before the battle, Constantine reportedly saw the sign of Christ in the sky. And it's the first two letters of the Greek name for Christ, which is the X and the P. The X makes the K sound, and it looks like a big P, but it's called the Rho, Chi Rho, and it makes the R sound. So for the name Christ, they abbreviate it with the first two letters, and in Greek, that's a big X and a big P. And over the centuries, so Constantine puts this on all of his shields and symbols, and he wins. And then he stops the persecution of Christians. Over the years, the Chi Rho, the XP, just got shortened to the X. It was called the Chi or the Christ Cross or Crisscross. And that's where we get Xmas. So the X hyphen M-A-S is not crossing out Christ. It's the Greek letter that stood for Christ. And that's where you get the sign at the X when you swear before Christ that you're going to keep your promise. And then they would kiss it to show sincerity. That's where you get the X's and the O's on the bottom of the Valentine. You're swearing before Christ. You're going to keep your pledge. Kissing to show sincerity. And that's where you get to cross my heart, swear to tell the truth. Well, the cross is the Greek letter chi, which means you're swearing before Christ. You're going to keep your word.
Oh, my gosh, anyway. Bill. That's so fascinating. I never knew any of that.
Yeah. So it's called the Cairo or just the Chi. But so here's Constantine. He's a Christian. Nicholas is let out of jail. Nicholas can now preach publicly against paganism. And so nearby was the Temple to Diana. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, 127 huge pillars and temple prostitutes. It was the Las Vegas of the Mediterranean. And so Nicholas preaches against Diana worship, which the Apostle Paul did back in Acts chapter 19. And they all got together. Here's, you know, greatest Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians, her image fell from heaven, you know. Well, her image was this multi-breasted little pagan idol. And anyway, so Nicholas preaches against the sexual immorality of Diana worship. The people get stirred up enough, they tear the temple down.
Uh-oh.
And then the Romans had a practice of exposure of unwanted infants. It was their version of abortion. The mother would bear the child and lay it at the father's feet. If the father picked the child up, they would keep it. If he didn't and thought they couldn't afford it or the child looked sickly, the mother would have to put the baby in a basket and go out into the woods and expose it to the elements and give their tearful goodbyes to their baby and let the baby die. And this is where you get those traditions of an elderly couple gets a knock on the door and they open it and there's a baby in a basket,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, you know, well, then they adopt the baby. Well, that's the Roman tradition. They would expose these little babies and the Christians would condemn this practice in the same way that they condemn abortion today. And anyway, so Nicholas is preaching against infant exposure and then divination. These pagans would cut open, you know, chickens and look at their gizzards and try to predict the future. They had whole courses in the Roman pagan schools on how to interpret a liver, you know. Mm. And so Nicholas preaches against this divination. And then you have the Olympics. Now, the Olympics were ran naked. The word gym for gymnasium is the Greek word for naked. So a gymnasium was where a bunch of naked men ran around. And, you know, you see all these Greek statues and they're all naked. And so Nicholas preaches against this and eventually they end the Olympics. And so then there's the Arian heresy and Arius. So for the first three centuries of Christianity, there are 10 major persecutions. Christians are thrown to the lions and they're going to church in catacombs. I went to school in Rome and college and we toured the catacombs and you have to, you know, you're driving, going down some little country road and you walk down this, you know, trail and there's like a ditch with like an iron gate, but it's the tour guide comes up and unlocks it and you got to bend over and scoot back about 30 yards and you get into this little bitty room, like 20 by 20, and there's torch mark on the ceilings and little first century Christian graffiti. And that was the Christian experience for three centuries. And Constantine, so you don't live long enough to argue over doctrine. You're raided and thrown to the lions. Once Constantine legalizes Christianity, it's now okay to be a Christian and speak publicly. Well, that's when you have the first heresy.
Okay,
Arianism.
Let's stop right there and go to break. And when we come back, let's continue this conversation. So the first heresy, and we're talking about this fabulous book. It is There Really Is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions by William J. Federer. We have Bill Federer on the line. Bill, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Jason McBride, we've been talking with Bill Federer about his great book, and that is There Really Is a Santa Claus and the History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. I love Christmas Eve. I love to go to church on Christmas Eve. And then we put out, one of our traditions is we put out luminarias. And so come home from church and see all the luminarias. My neighbor, he loves to put out a lot of them. And one of these days, I think that we're going to have a plane actually land on our street because we're so lit up.
Oh, you look like a runway down
there.
Yeah,
we look like
I hope it's not a big enough plane that the wings take off the chimney so Santa can't come down.
Oh, that would not be good.
That would be a tough one.
That would not
be
good.
That would be a tough one.
I love Christmas Eve.
Well, and it's a lot of fun. You know, my kids are older now. There's nothing like little kids on Christmas morning, and being a parent, you know, they're trying to wake you up at 5 in the morning. And honestly, you got to have a little bit of fun with, okay, I'll be down and just hold on. I got to wash my face. Just a minute. I want to brush my teeth. I don't want to have bad breath on Christmas. And, you know, they're about to explode like spinning tops. But, you know, we always had to have the big presents. Santa leaves those right in front of the fireplace. He always tended to find blankets in our house to cover them up with so they couldn't be seen. And the stockings hang right there. So, you know, those are things that you just never will forget as a parent, your little kids coming in and you know, it's kind of about greed when they're little and they don't understand, but it's still a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I've thought a lot about it, though, Jason, and gift giving. I love to give gifts, and it really is a symbol of love. Gifts don't have to be, it's not something you have to do.
Right.
Gifts are something that you love to do.
Well, I think it is, and we love to give, you know, our kids gifts and your friends gifts, and even if it's just the gift of hanging around
being
with
together.
Friends and having some good food and drink, not too much, only in moderation, of course. But, yeah, it is a wonderful time of the year. And, you know, I'm thankful this year, again, for our president, who has really fought and fought to make it okay to say Merry Christmas again.
Who would have ever thunk it that, you know, we would never have gotten to get to a point where we would not say Merry Christmas? I mean, the whole Christmas idea is peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Yeah, it's funny.
And women.
You know, I admit sometimes I watch that show Family Guy, which isn't necessarily politically correct. And the episode this last Sunday, they're showing the Christmas thing at school that the kids do. And there's a big sign up there. And I can't remember what it said. It said something like non-denominational holiday festival. And then underneath, because of that one family.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Christmas Eve, there's just so much to be grateful for in this country. And, of course, the hope of Christmas as well. Jason McBride, I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas.
Well, I do, too. And since it's Christmas, don't forget to go to airpresidential.com or kimmonson.com and download your copy of this year's Santa Claus stocks. You can also call Natalie at 303-694-1600 and get a hard copy. Those are always a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. We did that show earlier in the week, and be sure and go to airpresidential.com and download that. So Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great one, Kim.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated 3 times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. It is Christmas Eve, one of my most favorite days of the year. Have on the line with me William J. Federer. We're talking about his book, There Really Is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. You can find that at AmericanMinute.com. And this is absolutely fascinating about St. Nicholas. And before we went to break, Constantine has actually stopped the persecution of Christians. And you said that leads into the first heresy. So take it from there, Bill.
Right. So for the first 3 centuries of Christianity, they didn't live long enough to argue over doctrine. And now that it's legal to be a Christian, you have a bishop named Arius. And he says that Jesus is a little less than God. He's a created being. He writes a catchy song. And so when the Visigoths, who were some of the people that came into the Roman Empire, they converted completely to Arianism, and now it's splitting the church. And since Constantine made the church sort of the de facto religion in Rome, it's now splitting the Roman Empire. And so Constantine's attitude was, well, I don't understand theology, but you guys got to settle this thing quick. He gets all of the bishops to Nicaea. He pays for them to come. It is the first time ever in Christian history that all of the bishops get together in one place. And they settle the Arian heresy by writing the Nicene Creed, and they all agree on it. And then the story is that Nicholas was so upset at Arius for starting the Arian heresy that Nicholas slapped Arius across the face. Mm-hmm. And so there's on these, you know, fourth century churches, and they have murals of St. Nicholas. He's reaching over and slapping Arius. I actually was going online to find a picture of this, and there's some pictures that were painted on old church walls, but somebody sort of put the little caption underneath, and it says, Nicholas, I came to give presents to kids and to punch heretics. I just ran out of presents. But anyway, so Nicholas is known for being, sort of having a fiery temper, so you better watch out if he's coming to town. Now, the Greeks have lots and lots of stories about Nicholas. Again, he's sort of the founding father of the Greek Orthodox faith. And one of the stories is there was a famine in the area. His people were dying, but the ships would come from North African grain fields, stop off at Myra on their way to Rome. Nicholas goes down to the dock, talks some of the sailors into unloading some of their grain, promising that God would bless them. And sure enough, on their return trip, they said the grain that was left multiplied, and they had more than enough. Then there was a storm, and it being a port city, the sailors and fishermen couldn't get back to the docks. They get Nicholas. He prays. The sea becomes calm, so he becomes the patron saint of sailors. By the way, I missed out when Nicholas throws those three bags of gold in the window for the three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he became the patron saint of pawnbrokers. I think, what? Yeah, so pawnbrokers will put three gold balls outside of their shop, right? So they'll have like three hanging gold balls, and that became the symbol of the pawnbroker. And they say, well, we help families in their time of financial need. You know, it's like, okay, that's a little bit of a stretch. But nevertheless, you'll often see St. Nicholas with the, you know, statue or a painting with him having three gold balls and, you know, representing those three bags of gold, and then the pawnbrokers with three gold balls. But now he's the patron saint of sailors. And then another story is there was a corrupt politician, and he was about to have some soldiers blamed for his corruption and killed. We're familiar today with maybe there's a corrupt politician and a whole lot of people around this politician end up, being suicided, mysteriously being killed. And so it's sort of like you want to kill somebody that knows the dirt on you. And so this governor was going to kill these soldiers, and Nicholas hears about it. And he runs down to where the execution is about to take place. He busts through the crowd. He grabs the sword out of the executioner's hand and throws it down. And then in front of everybody, he tells what the corrupt governor was doing. And the governor realizes nobody could know all the details except God. And so he realizes his number's up, and he begs Nicholas to pray for him. So if Nicholas were alive today, he would be confronting all the corrupt politicians. And anyway, he dies in 343 AD on December 6th. And then you have another emperor named Justinian, and he is the one who builds that big Hagia Sophia Cathedral in Constantinople. But Justinian is the last emperor of the united Eastern and Western Roman Empires. But he builds a church in Myra and dedicates it to St. Nicholas, right? This is, again, St. Nicholas is to Greeks what St. Peter is to Roman Catholics. He's, like, really important. Then fast forward 988 AD, Vladimir the Great of Russia. He decides to embrace monotheism, throws the pagan gods in the Dnieper River. Some Muslims find out he wants to embrace monotheism. They come and tell him about Islam. And the First Chronicle of Russia, their court document, says Vladimir listened intently when they told him that paradise was filled full of virgins because he was fond of women. But then when they said he could no longer drink alcohol, he said, we cannot have this because drink is the joy of the Russes, the Russians. So I think it's sort of humorous that Russia didn't convert to Islam because Vladimir liked to drink. The Jews come and present their monotheistic faith. And he said, now let me get this straight. You offended your God and he kicked you out. Now why should I follow you? And then the Roman Catholics. But finally, the Greek Orthodox come. And their Hagia Sophia church is the biggest church in Christendom for like 1,000 years. 165 feet high, 102 foot across dome, 4 acres of gold mosaics. And they speak Greek, the language of the New Testament. And their land is where John spoke and Paul spoke, all the figures in the New Testament. And so they present the Greek Orthodox as sort of like this is the, you know, official. And Vladimir converts, and he adopts Nicholas as the patron saint of Russia.
Oh.
So that's why so many people in Russia are named Nicholas or Nikolai. And they used to have a St. Nicholas church in just about every city in Russia. And then the Muslims invade into Asia Minor, and all 7 churches mentioned in the book of Revelation, right? Ephesus and Thyatira and Sardis and Pergamum and, you know, Philadelphia and Laodicea, all those cities are wiped out by the Muslim Turks. All the letters in the New Testament written to Ephesus and Colossae and Galatia and Philippi and Corinth, and all those cities are wiped out by the Muslim Turks. And so they're destroying graves and artwork and museums and schools. And so the Christians in Asia Minor take the bones of their famous St. Nicholas and they ship them over to Italy. And the Pope dedicates a church. It's still there. It's in the town of Bari, B-A-R-I. It's called Cathedrale Niccolò di Bari, Cathedral of Nicholas of Bari. And the Pope that dedicates the church is Urban II. Now, listeners may not be up on their Pope names, but that's the same Urban II that goes to the Council of Clermont and gets all the leaders of Western Europe together and begs them to send help to these Greek Christians that are being killed. They send help. It's called the First Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't have had, might not have had a St. Nicholas in Western Europe had it not been for Islamic Jihad conquering into Eastern Europe. And it was so serious with all these Greeks taken. It would be like us shipping our, you know, remains of George Washington, to Canada to protect him if our country was getting invaded. I mean, so this Pope says, this is really serious, send help. And so they do send help, call the Crusades. Well, anyway, now that St. Nicholas is, traditions are in Italy, the gift giving catches on. And it's so popular that St. Francis of Assisi, sort of in protest, creates the nativity scene in 1223 AD, saying, look, all this gift giving is fine, but we need to get back to the real reason for the season. Jesus was born in a manger. And St. Francis was known for being against materialism and, you know, all the riches and physical possession and things like gifts. And he's like, no, let's get back to the real reason Jesus, the Son of God, was born in a manger. So whenever you see a creche scene, nativity scene, that goes all the way back to St. Francis of Assisi in 1223 AD. Of course, it really goes all the way back to Bethlehem. Then the Reformation starts in 1517. Martin Luther, by this time, there is a saint's day for every day of the year. Matter of fact, numerous saint's days. And the churches are filled full of all kinds of saint statues and relics and so forth. And Martin Luther thinks this is a distraction from Christ. And so he gets rid of all the saint's days. But the Germans like the gift giving. And so Martin Luther moves all the gift-giving to December 25th and says all gifts come from the Christ child. And the German pronunciation of Christ child is Christkindl, like kindercare, kindergarten. Kindle means child, and Christ means Christ. And so Christ child, Christkindl. Over the centuries, Christkindl got pronounced Christkringle.
Okay. So
Christkringle is really Christkindl, which means Christ child. Anyway, now December 25th, this is something I've think is fascinating. People say, well, that couldn't have been the date because the shepherds were in the field with flocks and it was wintertime. It's like, hello, Jerusalem and Bethlehem have the same climate as Dallas and Houston. It's like an average of over 50 degrees every day in December. And they had sheep and they had flocks and they were in the field because they needed the sheep every day because they did sacrifices every day. Number two, they said, well, it's Saturnalia. It's a pagan feast. It's like, okay, that's the winter solstice. That's December 22nd. They would start their celebrations December 21st. They would end it December 23rd. And so they go, where does December 25th come from? Now, this is interesting. In the Gospel of Luke, it has John the Baptist's father, Zacharias. He's in the temple, and he's offering incense. The angel appears to him, says he's going to go home, and his wife will get pregnant, and he is to name the child John. There's this little line in there. It says, Zechariah was of the course of Abijah. We read it really fast. We don't know what that means. Well, King David took all the Levite families. He broke them into 24 groups, and they each had two times a year, a week at a time, they would go to Jerusalem, and they would be the priests for that week. And the course of Abijah was one of those family groups. And the question that was posed is, well, when was, can we prove that the course of Abijah, when did that take place in the calendar? Well, Josephus, the Jewish historian, said that when the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed, the first week of August, 70 AD, the course of Jehoiarib was on duty. Well, that's important because Jehoiarib was the first of the 24 Levite family groups, and Abijah was the eighth of the 24. And so all we have to do is say, okay, first week of August is Jehoiarib, and just count down seven more weeks, you get to the end of September. And so now we know that the course of Abijah was the end of September. We also know that because the Dead Sea Scrolls. So 1950s, Dead Sea Scrolls are discovered. One of the Jewish scholars goes through there, and he sees King David's listing of these 24 family groups, and he sees the Hebrew months that they apply to, and you transfer the calendar over, it comes out to the end of September. And so if Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, is in the temple this last week of September, the course of Abijah, that last week is when the Day of Atonement takes place, Yom Kippur, and also the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, takes place. Those two important Jewish events take place this last week. And so he goes home, and if his wife conceives. Now, the gospel.
You know what? Let's stop right there, Bill. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue with this very fascinating story. I'm talking with William J. Federer about his book, There Really Is a Santa Claus, History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516. A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Podcasts of the show are there. And I'm really pleased to be talking with William Federer. Christmas Eve is such a special day, and we're going through these Christmas traditions. This book that you've written, Bill, There Really Is a Santa Claus, History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. People can find that at your website, AmericanMinute.com. And it's just fascinating, but we're getting to the point you were setting this up. Why is Christmas on December 25th?
Great. So we have the gospel telling us when the angel appears to Mary, says the Holy Spirit's going to come upon you, you're going to conceive, the child's going to be the Son of God. And it says, and your cousin Elizabeth is in her sixth month. Okay. So if we know that Zacharias, of course, of Abijah, is in the temple last week of September, 6 months after the last week of September, which includes September 25th, 6 months later is March 25th. And so March 25th is the traditional day for the Annunciation. It's celebrating the angel appearing to Mary. Well, 9 months after March 25th is December 25th. And so that is how the date came about. Now, it's sort of interesting. In Western Europe, December 25th was the holiest day. In Eastern Europe, Epiphany, when the three wise men visited, is the holiest day. They couldn't decide which day was holier. So at the Council of Tours in 567 AD, they decide to make all 12 days from December 25th to January 6th the 12 days of Christmas. So the 12 days of Christmas is not 12 days leading up to Christmas. It's the 12 days from December 25th to January 6th. They call them holy days. And over the years, holy days got pronounced holiday. So when we say, oh, don't say Merry Christmas, just say Happy Holidays. Well, holiday means holy day. Holy days are the 12 days of Christmas. You can't get away from it. And now Martin Luther, he brings the Reformation to Germany. And he is credited for putting candles in the tree and telling his children it's the sky above Bethlehem, like the sky above Bethlehem on the night of Christ's birth. Now, tree, where does that come from? Well, Germans were pagans, and just like St. Patrick went to the pagan Druids in Ireland, you had a St. Boniface, also called Winfrid, in 722 AD. He's a missionary to these pagan Germans. Germans worship the god named Thor. That's where we get the word Thor's Day. They also worshiped another god named Woden. That's where we get the word Wednesday. Anyway, so Thor lived in a big oak tree in Geismar, Germany, and these pagans would sacrifice and even do human sacrifice in front of this oak tree to this pagan god Thor. And St. Boniface takes a big axe on Christmas Eve, 722 AD, chops down Thor's tree. And some people say, well, stop him, and somebody else says, well, Thor's really a god. He can protect the tree. So he reminds you of Gideon, and he chops down the grove, and they're like, bring him out and kill him. And his dad says, no, if Baal's really a god, he can protect his own, idols. So the story that's passed down is that St. Boniface pointed to a little evergreen tree and said, let it shelter no deeds of blood. It's like everlasting life because it's green all year round. It points toward heaven, and it's let it be the tree of the Christ child. Anyway, so the evergreen tree was in the shape of a triangle, and so this was to help teach the Trinity, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, very similar to St. Patrick using the three-leaf clover to teach the Trinity in Ireland. Again, these are illiterate people, and they would try to use things that they could relate to. The lights on the tree, all right, Martin Luther puts them in the tree. Well, all the way from 165 B.C., Jews were putting lights in their window during this winter season for Hanukkah. And this celebrates the Jews driving the pagans out of Jerusalem and cleaning out the temple and relighting the menorah, the lampstand, but they only have enough oil for one day. They pour it in, it lasts 8 days. So it's called the Feast of Dedication because they're rededicating the temple. And even Jesus celebrated Hanukkah, the Feast of Dedication. The Book of John says that Jesus was in Jerusalem for the Feast of Dedication, walking among Solomon's porch, and they come to him and they said, how long will you make us, wait? Are you the Christ, the Messiah? Anyway, so we talked about the real St. Nicholas. We talked about the Muslim invasion and, him coming to his traditions coming to Italy. We talked about Vladimir taking his traditions to Russia. We talked about Martin Luther and what happened in Germany. Now let's talk about England. England had Henry VIII bring the Reformation there, but not because he had a spiritual experience. He just wanted another wife. Ended up having six wives. But he brings back an old Roman holiday, Saturnalia. Britain used to be a Roman colony. Saturn was the god of feasting and plenty and merriment. And during Henry VIII's time, Christmas became sort of a Mardi Gras. See, Mardi Gras was actually a religious day. It was the day before Lent, when mm-hmm. you would fast 40 days before Easter, and now it's this lewd party in New Orleans. And so during Henry VIII's time, Christmas was wassailing and carousing and drinking and gaming. And if you ever saw the Christmas Carol with Charles Dickens, there's the spirit of Christmas present. And it's this big guy, wreath in his hair, goblet of wine, you know, robes on. And you're looking at him asking yourself, who is this guy? He sort of looks like Santa Claus, also sort of looks like some Roman god. Well, that was Saturn, but they Christianized him, called him Father Christmas. They couldn't call him St. Nicholas because saints were outlawed. Then the Puritans take over England, and they outlawed Christmas. They actually had a 5-shilling fine for anybody caught celebrating Christmas. They said, can God be honored by mad mirth and hard drinking and, you know, lewd gaming fit for a Bacchus or a Muhammad in Ramadan? And the Puritans settled Massachusetts. They outlawed Christmas, but it wasn't until the Dutch came over, and the Dutch loved Christmas. And so in Holland, they do a little take. They still have St. Nicholas visiting once a year, riding a white horse. Where's that come from? So the Catholic saying that people are familiar with, St. Peter's at the gates of heaven. Well, the Greeks do a take on the book of Revelation, where Jesus will return at the end of the world to judge the living and the dead, riding a white horse. And the saints will come back with him, riding white horses. And St. Nicholas is a saint, so he'll be one of those riding a white horse. But he's such a special saint, they have him coming back once a year for a little mini judgment, a little checkup on the kids, make sure they're on the right track, see who's naughty, see who's nice. And then the angels turn into the elves, and the Lamb's Book of Life turns into the Book of the Naughty and the Nice. In Norway, they didn't have horses. He's riding a reindeer. And the saints come from where? Celestial City, heaven, New Jerusalem. That turns into the North Pole. You can sort of see where it gets off track. But in Holland, they still have him coming once a year dressed as a saint. And he has with him a little Moorish costumed helper, Zwarte Piet, Black Peter. And he's a Muslim. And they tell the kids, if you're good, St. Nicholas will give you a present. If you're naughty, Zwarte Piet will put you in a gunny sack, take you back to Spain, and sell you into Muslim slavery. Because the Muslims had Spain for 7 centuries and would enslave over 1 million people. And so often you tell a little Dutch boy that Santa Claus is coming. By the way, Santa Claus is the Dutch pronunciation of Saint Nicholas.
Okay. Right? Oh.
And so anyway, the little kids would start crying. I actually talked to one guy. He was from Holland. He goes, yeah, all the little boys would make sure to go to bed the night before St. Nicholas's visit with a pocket knife in their pocket. I said, why is that? He goes, that's to cut ourselves out of the gunny sack in case Zwarte Piet had taken us. Anyway, so the Dutch settled New Amsterdam, which became New York, and the first church they started was what? The St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church. And it existed for 3 centuries. Teddy Roosevelt went there. It was on 48th Street and 5th Avenue. Anyway, then they sold it to a Sinclair oil company, and they tore it down, built an office building, and all the members joined the Dutch Reformed Church called Marble Collegiate Church, and Norman Vincent Peale was the pastor there, and even Donald Trump went to the Marble Collegiate Church. But so anyway, the Dutch in New York, they had this St. Nicholas traditions, and so Washington Irving, he gave us Rip Van Winkle, Legend of Sleepy Hollow. He wrote Dietrich Knickerbocker's History of New York. And in there, he says St. Nicholas would visit the Dutch children once a year. But he describes him not wearing a bishop's outfit, but a typical Dutch outfit of long trunk hose, leather belt, boots, stocking hat. And New York, by the way, you know, and this was a real popular book. In this book, he mentions Gotham City for the first time. He coined that name for New York. And made up a fake name, you know, instead of John Bunyan or whatever. It was Dietrich Knickerbocker's History of New York. And Knickerbocker was a made-up name, but it's so popular, that's where you get the New York Knicks basketball team. And but in New York, you had Clement Moore. He's a Hebrew professor. His family donates land for the Episcopal Anglican Seminary. Well, he writes a poem for his children in 1823, and it starts off, so it's a night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. But he sort of shrunk in size. Now he's a jolly, plump old elf, you know. Then you have the Civil War. Thomas Nast, illustrator, Harper's Weekly magazine. He gives us the Republican elephant, Democrat mule. He's the first one to put a North Pole sign behind a picture of Nicholas. This was actually a political jab at the South during the Civil War. But then you have 1930, Haddon Sunblom, an artist. He gave us Quaker Oats Man, Aunt Jemima Syrup. He's hired by Coca-Cola. And he does a painting once a year of St. Nicholas, Santa Claus, drinking Coke. And Coca-Cola basically pioneered mass marketing. It's the best trademark name in the world. And so this is the image that we have today. But it all started with a real guy who lived in the 4th century, who loved Jesus enough to go into the ministry, face death at the hands of the Romans. He would preach against sexual immorality and Diana worship. He would preach against exposure of unwanted infants. He stood up to corrupt politicians, but he's most remembered for being generous and giving to the poor, but he wanted to do it anonymously because he wanted the credit to go to God, not to him. So underneath him at all, there really was a godly Christian man, Nicholas.
Oh, Bill Federer, this is just fascinating. I love it. I'm going to get the book. There really is a Santa Claus, the history of St. Nicholas and Christmas holiday traditions. Bill Federer, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2020.
Well, Kim, Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night.
Okay, thanks so much, Bill.
Thank you.
And on this Christmas Eve, our quote is from Bob Hope. He said, "My idea of Christmas, whether old-fashioned or modern, is very simple, loving others. Come to think of it, why do we have to wait for Christmas to do that? So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way." This is Kim Munson signing off, wishing you a very Merry Christmas. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive. I was born free. I was born free. I was born free.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.